The News Dissector with Danny Schechter, Fridays at 1 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Hey, good afternoon, everybody. I'm Danny Schechter, your News Dissector. Here we are once again on the ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com. You'll be able to hear the program later on as well as a podcast that'll be on iTunes and on the PRN website. Every week at this time, we basically discuss some of the issues I've raised in my blog at NewsDissector.com. We try to look at the media. We try to look at movements for change. We try to look at the mess in our country, and that's where we're starting off today. As you know, there's no deal in Washington yet. Boehner, I call him Boehner, I wonder why. Anyway, he had to withdraw his bill last night because he was going to lose on votes, and now he's rewritten it yet again. I think this is the third time to try to get something that the ultra-right wing can sign on to. They want a balanced budget amendment for whatever good that will do them, some sort of symbolic concession from the Republican House Majority Leader. So the vote now, it looks like it's going to be postponed again, maybe later today, maybe tomorrow. We don't know, but this whole problem continues basically to hang over all of us. President Obama made another plea today to the Republicans, please pass this bill, and we'll see what happens. In the meantime, there's a lot of discussion, debate about all of this. I was struck by the voice of Paul Krugman in the New York Times today, sounding very much like I sounded 2 weeks ago when I made some of the same points. He says, the facts of the crisis over the debt ceiling aren't complicated. Republicans have, in effect, taken America hostage, threatening to undermine the economy and disrupt the essential business of government unless they get policy concessions they would never have been able to enact through legislation. And Democrats, who would have been justified in rejecting this extortion altogether, have in fact gone a long way towards meeting the Republican demands. As I've said, it's not complicated, yet many people in the news media apparently can't bring themselves to acknowledge this simple reality. News reports portray the parties as equally intransigent. Pundits fantasize about some kind of a centrist uprising as if the problem was too much partisanship on both sides. It isn't. We're in a bank-dominated, bank-run economy. Today, the latest figures show that there is no recovery going on. None. Period. Kaput. Forget it. Finished. There's no real economic promise here. Things are getting worse. There are more and more reports of more layoffs and more basic companies that are unable to sell their products in the marketplace because people don't have the money to buy it. So those are just a few headlines and lead lines from me on this economic crisis. We're focusing today on News Dissector Radio on media. We're going to be joined in a minute by the wonderful Irene McGee, straight out of California, not out of Compton, but out of Frisco, who's been on the radio there for a long time, and it was a lot to tell us about what she's doing these days. And then later we go back to California. Irene will stick with us, and we're going to meet Maria Armudian, who's just written a new book about media framing and how it all works. She's a host on Pacifica Radio in L.A. and other radio outlets. So we have a lot for you today. You can join us on the phone at 877-627-5065. That number again, 877-627-5065. It's a free call. Join us if you will. So there we go. Here we are, News Dissector Radio. Time for some news goo.
Wish you were soft and smooth.
The world in a
40% of the stations carried no news of the world.
Freedom of the press is only guaranteed when you own the press.
Communication breakdown. Pause for the message breakup. Every station is a gentrification. Global syndication is the shaping of the nation. ABC, Disney, NBC, GE, Murdoch gets Foxy, and with a hint, he owns a pen, the camera, the sword, buy a Coke, buy a Ford, getting broke, getting bored.
And experience your psychic connection.
We don't have shit to say, we don't have anything to do.
What we want, what we need, what we want, what we need. But do we even know who plants the seeds? You think the media works for you, but it's a job for them, they're just selling fruit. Slim slam diagram, data jam, handicap, caught it. Yo, you bought it. My mind is a profitable thing to waste. You want another taste, baby? Got news goo.
What we need to know.
News goo.
What we want to know.
News goo.
News do what we need to know. That's what we're getting on the many of the main channels, but not here on the Progressive Radio Network. Gary Null just left the studio a few minutes ago with some ecstatic news that Progressive Radio was actually getting more listeners than NPR, than Pacifica Radio, than many other outlets. So this is an emerging network, a growing network, a network that's not sponsored by any commercial sponsors, but nevertheless is building a large audience, and we're glad to be part of it, and we hope that you will enjoy the programs and participate in them and tell your friends about them. So that's the whole challenge here. If we want a media system that's different from the one that we have today, we have to help build it. We have to help create it. We can't rely on them, the big corporations, to do so. The Rupert Murdochs of the world, of course, have no interest in offering more diverse information, news, and other features. So if it's to happen, we have to make it happen. We're trying in our own way. I'm doing it with a blog. I do it with my films, Plunder, The Crime of Our Time, and others. But I'm also doing it with this radio show, and I'm really pleased to be back with you this week, and hope I will be in weeks to come. So again, the number to call, 877-627-5065. My guest this morning, today, this afternoon, whatever time it is, and wherever you live, is Irene McGee. Now, Irene is a young woman who is kind of a gung-ho media literacy advocate, somebody who took it upon herself to create a radio show to question all of the top people in the media industry, to challenge them, to ask them questions, to try to get them to explain to her why the media is so bad and what we can do about it. Welcome, Irene. You're usually in the West Coast, so I'm really happy that you're here in New York. Tell us about what brings you here and about how you sense we can continue the work that you've done in the past.
Yeah, well, the show that I had was called No One's Listening, which is actually how I know you, Danny.
Okay.
And it was actually, I came out here to New York. Well, go ahead.
Go ahead.
Felt like you had a pre-question for my
question. No, I'm listening. I'm just like mesmerized.
Okay. Oh, that's good. That's good. Yeah, so I came out from San Francisco to New York just because this is where you need to be for media stuff. I think San Francisco is a great city for everything when you want to learn and sort of try new things, but New York's the place you kind of need to be if you want to make those ideas happen a lot of times.
And apparently in the interim, you've now gotten hooked up with a new website. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so in the interim, there's this website called FYI Living, so it's fyiliving.com. And basically what I was trying to do with that is to start a website which actually explains the science and health wellness research. So there's a lot of stuff, and it says, how the media works. It says, this study found, 40% of diabetics felt better after eating whatever. But you never know where the study came from, how many people were in it, the method they used. And so on FYI, we explain in detail all those research studies. So it's actually the first time anyone's doing this, I think, kind of anywhere as it relates to health and wellness news. And it's just like when I did No One's Listening, I said people will listen about the media if we give them the right information. That worked. Again, if people have the right information, they want to read about this. So
let me know what kind of, tell us about your show, what was happening with it, what kind of impact you had with it. That's sort of interesting.
So No One's Listening, actually, I was studying in grad school about media, and I had previously lectured at colleges about media and media ethics,
You were for them or against them?
I had been on The Real World on MTV many, many years ago, and this was before reality TV was kind of the big thing that it is today. And I left the show during the taping because I was ethically opposed to how it was created. And then out of my frustration, I started going and talking about colleges, and I was talking about product placement. And this is before, people didn't know about this stuff back then. And so I talked about product placement. I was talking about, the types of messages, how we learn and retain information from watching these TV shows. And then I decided to start this podcast called No One's Listening, and it was kind of this perfect storm of everybody said, oh, nobody will want to talk to you. You'll never get, you know, the heads of whatever networks to talk to you. And people in the media won't talk about it. And the reverse was true. I mean, I got in front of the heads of almost every major network. And they gave real interviews because I think, you know, it's easy for people to say, oh, media's bad or the people in charge are bad. And that's just simply too simple. Like, I don't think everybody involved in the process of media creation is bad. And actually, I think a lot of them have good intentions. I think it's a lot more complex than that.
Well, it certainly is. I mean, we don't see ourselves here as being bad, you know. I mean, I worked at ABC News. I worked at CNN. I worked even briefly at CNBC. You know, I didn't think I was being bad. I tried to do honest work. But I ran into certain obstacles in the commercial context that made it more difficult to offer the kinds of views that I thought were important, the perspectives that were missing in the news. And,
right.
You know, often in media, it's not just commission. You know, bad guys, you know, have an agenda and they try to push it, let's say, on Fox. But it's omission, you know, where a lot of information is not being covered or a lot of context is not being offered. A lot of background is missing. So people hear it, but they don't really understand it. They don't really have the background or the...
Well, they don't have the tools to disseminate it. I mean, I think that's one of the biggest issues, too. You know, it's interesting because one of the interviews that I did, which was one of my favorites, which, you know, I had this woman on. It was the same... I did a show on video news releases, which are basically for people listening. People send out press releases. Press companies send out press releases. And now they do that with videos. So they put news anchors that look like news anchors in front of a press release, and then news stations will air that as if it's regular news, when in fact it's a PR release. And so I'd done this story on video news releases, and I had this woman who was actually a producer. She used to work at Fox, and then she was at CNN. And what she was saying was pretty interesting, because she was saying that when they'd done the CNN 24-hour news network, they wanted to do it to create space. But it was right during the time of the, what was that girl's name, JonBenet Ramsey? And what they found was the ratings, everybody just wanted to hear about that missing girl. So when they had first started that network, the intentions were to cover more types of stories, but they have to chase the dollar. And so I think that is one of the things that makes this a lot more complex than, you know, the New York Times is selling newspapers, period. Like, they're making money. They have to, you know, we're the advertisements run this.
Right, they're making money from the ads, not necessarily the circulation.
Well, right.
But when they say, this is what the people want,
I have
a problem with that, because what I find is that many executives in the media try to opt for the safest possible course. Therefore, they don't really tackle stories that matter on the grounds that the people are not interested. My experience is that when something is interesting, when subjects are presented in an interesting way, people will tune
listen.
In
well,
and
that,
they will listen.
Exactly.
By the way, I want you to meet Kat here.
Hi, Kat.
How
Kat,
are you?
Kat has been, I would say, more than an intern. She's been a real supporter and participant in this show in the past, and
fan.
I wasn't even
was
sure
great.
If she was showing up, but she's here. This is Irene McGee, who is from San Francisco, now relocated to New York, who did a program on media literacy, and we're talking about media issues now. Now, in your experience, as you interviewed various media executives and officials, what was the takeaway? What did you feel was happening? Were they genuflecting with you? Were they trying to just be promotional? Or were they copping to any problems?
Absolutely not. I mean, actually, that was the most fascinating thing about all these interviews. You know, they never get asked about the system or how it works. And when I would sit down and ask them, you know, from, you know, it sounds weird and name droppery, but, you know, some of the people that I had on the show were really, really high up, and And they would talk to you. You know, I had William Randolph Hearst, who I said to him, well, how come there's only one Associated Press? There's no competition. Like, this doesn't make sense. How did this get formed? Like, how is it possible that there's one Associated Press that's printing everything, basically? And he was like, yeah, it's a problem. You know,
well, media monopoly is a problem. In the case of the Associated Press is actually, believe it or not, a not-for-profit.
It's a non-profit, right.
A not-for-profit, which actually is owned by the large newspapers. So, it's autonomous. It also has on its board all the top newspaper people. The Reuters news agency is now owned by a Canadian company. It was British for many years. Then it had an American CEO. Now it's owned by the British company Thomson. And so they, quote, compete. Now we have Bloomberg, but mostly competes on business news, not on general news. And they're based here, of course, in New York. But the bottom line is that even though they're different companies, they tend to take the same approach. They look at the world through the same eyes.
Yeah.
They have a top-down, elite-oriented perspective. And as a result, they don't explore a lot of issues that could be or should be explored, in my opinion.
You know, I actually, so my show, No One's Listening, had gotten picked up by CBS Talk Radio, which was huge for me at the time because I'd been doing No One's Listening as a podcast. It got, you know, so many downloads. It was a very popular thing online. But back then, stuff like that didn't make money. It was just a labor of love, literally a labor. I mean, every week it was, you know, six guests, tons of work. So when it got picked up by CBS, I was so excited. But as soon as you get picked up, I mean, literally, they said the day I signed the papers, they were like, so, do you feel like a sellout? And I was like, no, I'll still talk about media and what I want to talk about. But I remember sitting with an executive, and he was just like, we don't care that you can get Noam Chomsky. And he literally said, you know, you're fun and funny. Just talk about sex more. And it was like, it was so bizarre because I worked so hard to have this happen. And then you get there and, you know, they're just chasing ratings. So I think when they had originally started the station, they really did want to have different types of radio programs. And then when that started to not work, they turned it into trying to get more shock jock. And, you know, that now it's music. None of it works, so now it's music. You know.
Well, now we know, though, that having more media outlets is not necessarily having better.
That's exactly
media
it.
Outlets. And so what's happened in the cable universe is that we now have, you know, hundreds of channels, but also fewer and fewer choices, really. If you're looking for information of a different character, it's hard to find. Like, for example, here in America, you can't see Al Jazeera news except in one or two cities or three cities in America, in the whole country. Okay, you have to watch it online, on your phone, but you can't get it on television. Why is that? Has it just happened? Is it just some accident? Because the American networks have never heard of Al Jazeera. How come it's on in 250 countries, but not in ours? And I was just in South Africa, and I was watching it in the morning, and there were so many stories there that you never see in the American media. Okay, so you have a screening out of other points of view, even if it's done well, even if it's done, in this case, a channel owned by, you know, the Emir of Qatar, which is a, you know, oil-rich, natural gas-rich, you know, country, state in the Gulf region, who, you know, hardly a communist-controlled country. He's a capitalist, you know, but it doesn't matter because, you know, they're suspicious of what his point of view might be. When they hear Al Jazeera, they think Al-Qaeda. You know, and, you know, we have this complete lack of sophistication, and it limits the information that Americans get and think and get to think about. And as a result, what we have is a media that reinforces our prejudices, our way of looking at the world in an insular and parochial way. And this is very frustrating. That's why we need to break out of that. That's why we need you on the air here.
Fantastic.
Well, tell me a little bit about this website you're doing. That's fascinating, too.
Oh, the FYI Living?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I don't know if you heard, Kat. So I am the editor for, it's a science and health and wellness website. But what's amazing about what we're doing, so when we started, I had been sick. I had had Lyme disease back in the day. And when you're sick, you will do anything to get better, right? You'll try any supplement. And what happens is you don't know what you're taking. You don't know if it works. You want to believe everything that's online, but a lot of it is scams. There's no real information. So what we do is we actually take the scientific journals. And what's amazing is, because these journals, you know, they'll come out with something about cherry juice cures insomnia, right? But you don't know how big the study size is. Like, that's great. I'd like to drink cherry juice if it helps. I actually do now because I found the study. But we write it, right? There'll be like 20-page, very in-depth scientific pieces that regular people can't understand, really. And we turn it into simple summaries so you can understand the information about the cherry juice summary. And then we have a nutritionist write an article about the story. So what I'm trying to do, ideally, is empower people to understand science and health in a different way. So you can find out, like, a study on toning shoes, for example, right? The toning shoes, mm-hmm. Kim Kardashian thing is huge. So there was a study. Now, it's small, but it says, like, that those shoes can actually cause more hip and joint problems. But everybody's wearing them to try to lose weight, and they're all in all the stores. So now that was one study. And so what we try to do is find all different types of studies out there.
Health is in direct conflict with profit, it really comes down to, and you have to, like, choose between giving people what's good and healthy at the expense of profit.
Well, that's an interesting concept. I don't know that it's, you mean because they want...
I mean, like you said before, giving the people what they want. I mean, if you're always giving people what they want and you're never challenging them, you're never, like, giving them the truth and challenging that what they want isn't necessarily good or healthy or a good choice.
Well, so that's interesting. So actually, this happened with Danny the other day. So he was talking about, like, a cleansing thing, and he went to some guru, and actually, from the scientific literature that we have on our site, a lot of it points to the fact that cleansing is quite possibly dangerous, and it can deplete your body, and probably if you do it a lot, right? Like, you know, but this is just some of the research on it. But it is interesting, right? Because everybody wants to be healthy. And the truth is, we'll spend a ton of money to get healthy. You'll spend a ton of money on alternative stuff.
But that's part of this also comes back, if you will, to media. And how good a job media
exactly.
is doing and reporting on all this. New York Times had a piece, I've been looking for it, but I guess it maybe was yesterday's paper, about a study which was very poorly prepared and, you know, which basically was done by people who had no experience in doing studies and, you know, leads to conclusions that often are false, or people take, you know, false hope in particular remedies or treatment modalities when, you know, they're presented with it in the press without it being rigorously tested, rigorously discussed or examined. So FYILiving.com, is that what it is? So check it out, folks, and see what you think. You're in the right place, because this is the home of Gary Null, who has spent a lifetime analyzing health and fitness issues, and is very respected for a lot of his work in this field. And, you know, he's in a way an American guru on this subject. But Gary also is not just narrowly focused on health and fitness. He's also concerned about the state of democracy, believes in the power of media, believes that we need media to raise these issues and to talk about the problems that our society is having. So that's something that we want to really discuss more. So, Ms. McGee, Irene McGee, with us, will you stay for the next half hour?
Oh, sure.
On the program?
You know I love you, Danny.
Oh, well,
we met from
that?
No One's Listening back in the day.
So there you go.
He was on my show.
I was on a show. I was converted. I was, like,
and
born
he's
again.
He's my hero.
I was born again. Anyway, thank you, Irene. Listen, stay with us. We're going to take a short break now. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Maria Armudian in California, who's a She's a rock and roller who is also a media analyst. So that'll be interesting. Stay with us here on News Dissector Radio on the ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com.
Your Honor, for many years, I operated a Ponzi scheme through the investment advisory side of my business. I knew what I was doing was wrong, indeed criminal.
The shine on America's shoes got gold.
When Wall Street stepped into the fold,
Congress paid off, workers paid off.
Stanford, AIG, and Madoff.
Credit swaps, credit stocks, empty wallets, and empty shops.
And bank walking to AAA.
Grandpa loses 401k.
Progressive Radio Network, your source for news and information.
Have you heard? The Burt Cohen Show brings you the hidden truths behind the stories that affect us all and gives you the information you need to build freedom, community, and a much better world. This is Burt Cohen. My past shows include The New Media Power of Comcast, Socialism for Wall Street Only, and How to Empower Your Own Community Over Corporate Interests. For archives, go to ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com and listen to The Burt Cohen Show every Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time on the ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com. The Burt Cohen Show. There's really nothing like it.
Houston, we have a problem.
Hi, I'm Christiane Brown. In today's 24-hour news cycle, most people get about a minute of real truth. Not on the Solution Zone. Every week, I bring in America's best-known activists, bloggers, authors, and politicians to uncover the hidden issues that help separate the truth from the spin.
The Solution Zone with Christiane Brown, every Wednesday at 3 on Progressive Radio Network.
This is Sandra B. Tay from Success Power Talk. You can listen live to me every Saturday at 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for the very best success strategies for your life, bringing you sumptuous, exciting topics, expert guests, and panelists from all over. You will not want to miss. Email me at coach@tateworks.com if you have questions you want read on the air. If you missed any past shows, go to progressiveradionetwork.com/archives to find them. Always take the best and leave the rest. Success Power Talks, every Saturday, 4 p.m. on Progressive Radio Network.
This is PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
To chase and to Wachovia, Wells Fargo, Sally Mae, to MasterCard and Citibank, and also B of A. American Express and Visa. Thank you.
Well, a little tribute to America's banks who are celebrating today because they've won a big ruling in the Madoff trustee case. A federal judge ruled on Thursday that the bankruptcy trustee trying to recover billions of dollars who lost money in the Bernie Madoff Ponzi scheme did not have the right to sue banks and other third parties on behalf of the victims. In other words, the banks that were complicit in this whole scheme have now managed to get themselves separated from it, as they tend to do. So thinking about America, we have to think about the banks that really are remain very much in control. Now, we were swinging over to Los Angeles across the country to talk with Maria Armudian. Welcome. How are you?
Danny Schechter.
Here I is.
Schechter. I'm doing great. How are you, Danny?
Here I is. You know, I'm a great fan of yours as somebody who has managed to do what I try to do in a small way, combine rock and roll with media analysis and media change. In other words, the fuse to some degree popular culture and our understanding and concerns about the media. Marie, tell our audience a little bit about you, what you're doing, and about your new book. We're going to talk more about that new book when it comes out, but just give us a little tease.
Well, boy. Well, the new book first, since that's coming out in just a couple of weeks, Kill the Messenger, the Media's Role in the Fate of the World. What I wanted to do, Danny, is try to really get media professionals and get audience members and policymakers to stop and think about what the effect is of what goes over the internet, over the airwaves, over the print, and when we receive it and we receive the messages, what these frames are telling us in essence and what the effects of that could be. And so what I did is I took a little trip around the world and looked at
poor baby
looked at places where media have had the most profound effects in really generating outcomes, and looking at how they have been used to foment hate and war and genocide. We looked into Rwanda, looked into Nazi Germany, looked into Bosnia, and these were societies that, much as people would like to say they've always been in conflict, you know, they weren't. In Rwanda, people were intermarried, and they worked together, and they played together and slept together, went to church together, until this concerted effort was made to separate these two kinds of people into an us and two of them, and then blame each other. And then one had control of most of the media, and the more they blamed the socioeconomic problems on this other group and gradually increased the hatred and the vitriol towards them, pretty soon you had people organizing to destroy them all.
Well,
that's the worst-case scenario.
Well, it's an important point, because people in the media usually say, when you talk to them, and I have, believe me, because I've worked in media for so many years, they say, well, look, we're not really responsible for what we do. It's up to the people. They make their own judgment. They listen to or don't listen to, watch or don't watch. It's up to them. And they say, we don't have any real influence. We just put it out there. That's their view. Now, they speak to advertisers. They say something quite different. We put together, you know, an audience of people who are going to buy your products. How do we know? Because we've done market research and studies to prove that, you know, that what we're selling on the air actually makes you money. So we do have an impact. We have an impact on your bottom line. Therefore, it's important for you to advertise with us. So, you know, they have it both ways, if you will. You know, denying that they have any impact or have to be responsible in any way. On the other hand, when they talk to advertisers, they take a very different view. We have a caller on the line. John Jersey is with us. Hi, John. How are you?
Hey, Danny. This topic on no one's listening is now is absurd, right? Because now we have Facebook, and there's a wave of something happens like what happened in the Middle East, you know, people share, and the message just goes on and on and on, right? So hopefully we have technology on our side, and natural news, right? Irene is doing her commentaries on medical explanations. You know, her message is going to go all across the world, just like there's almost a million, you know, hits that naturalnews.com gets, which they do pretty much the same thing, explain all the different studies and, you know, explain to people what everything means. So
you have a more sort of optimistic view that this information can get out there. We now have interactive media, new media, basically Twitter, Facebook, whatever. And
yeah, it works both ways, right?
So, in other words, the power of the networks, the power of the people that Maria, for example, has been analyzing and studying, they're losing power, whereas this new media is gaining power. What say you, Maria? Thanks, John.
I think both. I think what's happening with the internet in particular and the social networking is that you've got media power being diffused and spread out to more people and more actors. More of us, we can all contribute to the shaping of what things mean and our understandings about how sociopolitical events occur and what that means for us, our families, our communities, our neighborhoods. But keep in mind that it is going in all directions. So we call it in academia a construction. It's like one thing builds onto another thing, builds onto another thing. So, for example, the social networking in the Middle East. When we saw what occurred in Tunisia and Egypt, there was a lot of contribution from the social networking. But really, would that have had the same impact if you didn't have Al Jazeera aggregating all of it and communicating it to the rest of the community members and to the rest of the world, and then picked up by all of the other television networks? It was magnified. So it's really a construction.
It's really also a cumulative impact. You know what
Absolutely.
I mean? You have all these different strands of media, but if one story begins to attract the attention, I mean, for example, I'm sure this week we would be talking a lot more about Amy Winehouse if Norway didn't occur. And, you know, the terrible events in Norway sort of drove Amy, you know, out of the news to some degree. And, you know, it's because the TV networks love to do celebrity funerals and celebrity memorabilia and all the rest of it. So, you know, we have, you know, a situation where something that may be competing with another narrative, you know, basically stops that narrative from becoming as well heard, well seen as it might be. So, I mean, it is a more complicated mosaic here than simply what the networks want. They may want to propose a certain approach, but people might react against it. I mean, for example, when I was in South Africa, I read that the investigation in the parliament of News Corporation, which was covered by all the media, I saw a reference to the fact that social media sites in England had mobilized millions of people demanding that the government investigate this. I didn't hear about that in our media at all, that there were actually people pushing the government to do this investigation in the Parliament of Murdoch, etc. and so forth. It's very possible that wouldn't have happened if there wasn't a social media push.
Well, actually, just to interrupt for a sec, so I have like a double-edged sword with social media, right? Because I've used it, and that helped my show, and that's kind of really what got it out there. But the interesting thing is, networks, right, if you write letters, complaint letters, they always respond to that. They don't like any complaints. And so the interesting thing that is powerful about these social networks is that people are publicly complaining, so they publicly see the complaints, right? Because you used to write a letter, and a network could kind of ignore it, send it to their... And there was no way for the rest of the world to know.
Dear Ms. McGee, thank you very much for your letter of such and such and such a date. Believe me, this will be filed in a place where no one will see
it. And now they see it
writing.
Right.
Goodbye. So,
and now they see it on a chat board or... And so it's a lot harder for them to cover up the fact that people have discontent.
At the same time, Maria, even as we have this more interactive media, isn't it also true somehow that people don't really see the tremendous monopoly power of big media companies and how that affects what gets covered and what doesn't get covered?
I think the other piece is that it affects the way the narrative is framed. So... and try as we might in terms of individually doing our social networking in our own framing, we tend to follow them. And as much as we try, we might counter them, but it's still based on their frame. And they are also using the social networks. Let's not fool ourselves.
That's funny. That is true.
That you know, there's a mastery of social networking coming out of the very powerful, already established traditional media. So, you know, and I don't think we should look at it as, you know, it's us versus them or something like that. I think it's more like, well, how can we shape a narrative that we prefer? And now if we fold in the Norway incident, since you brought that up, Danny, the Norway incident, don't forget that that was also material that he was obtaining via internet in terms of the narrative of the hate narrative, as some would call it.
Yeah, coming from American websites
in
large part.
Websites.
And not only that, apparently today there are reports that he was ordering bullets from American manufacturers, you know.
Right.
So this is like a USA, made in USA stamp all over this Norway issue. And, you know, this global hate movement of which he was part and was trying to incite, there was just an arrest of a person with a gun in Finland who was part of his network in some way, in communication with him. So, you know, we're in an age of globalization. What happens in one place often affects what happens in another place. And I think the point that you made before is how we are all affected by the way the media looks at the world, even when we claim we're not, okay? I mean, we have in America the theme, like, everybody, I think for myself, everybody thinks for themselves. That's how Americans see themselves. Then when you look at the data of opinion formation, you see that a lot of people think exactly the same way, because that's kind of an approved way of thinking, and other ways of thinking are basically marginalized.
Well, human beings are naturally conformists. Even when we're being an anti-conformist, we're still dealing with the paradigm that we know. And when you are growing up in a culture, and when you're infused within a particular culture, within a particular group, it is very difficult to see another way. It's like a fish in a pond. And in order to be able to
I prefer the image of the frog in the tunnel, who looks up at the top of the tunnel and sees a little bit of sky and thinks that's the whole sky, because that's all the frog sees. So, you know, this is a situation where many of us, if we rely on one or two sources, we don't really question the sources of information. We kind of are brand fanatics. We tend to, I'm a Fox person, I'm a CNN person, whatever.
That is the funniest thing.
Reinforces conformity.
Do.
Yeah.
Right. They get super behind whatever network they're watching, as if essentially they all kind of cover the same topics anyway. Really.
There's actually a lot of truth to that. It's something that's pretty remarkable. When you look across the outlets, you see a remarkable similarity. Even, it may be a different framing slightly, but a lot of people covering the exact same stories.
Like I was looking, I was talking this morning with a guy here in New York who's a Greek American in part, and he is, you know, of course, very concerned about what's happening in Greece. And we both were discussing the media coverage of this whole Greek crisis, and both noted, you know, that the people who invested in Greece were the people who were now getting bailed out. You know, the big hedge funds, the big financiers, the banks and the like. When they invested, they knew there were risks in investing. They knew what the state of the economy was. They were doing it to try to get rich quick. Now, you know, as the economy collapses, now they're entitled to get paid back, whereas the people get screwed, you know. And it's like the people at the top get taken care of. The people at the bottom don't. And this is, part of the problem with understanding what's really going on. If you're reading a news story, and one of the things I was talking to Irene about before, but I didn't tell the whole story, But sometimes it's better to read the news from the bottom up, not from the top down. We have in America what's called a lead paragraph. And the top who, what, where, why, when is all in that lead paragraph. But I was once questioned by a Vietnamese journalist when I was in Vietnam. He says, why do you do that, Danny? Why do you have these, you know, lead paragraphs? People are not going to read the rest of the story. They're just going to read the summary at the very top. And, you know, when you read the rest of the story, you realize that it's much more complicated, that there are many more players, that there's a lot of other implications that you're not getting right away. And, you know, he basically said, try reading the story from the bottom up. And when you do that, you find that a lot of the best information, the juiciest morsels of information, are at the bottom of the story.
Danny, there's another point I think is really important here, and that is, why do we wait until the crisis as news entities to explain to people what's happening at all? Why is it that it took a guy opening fire on a camp of kids before we knew that there was a rise of this movement? Why do news organizations wait until a crisis?
Well, I mean, honestly, I think that's where I say, right, and being an editor and sort of working in media, I mean, Danny and I have also seen both sides, and it sounds like you have too. I think the tough thing is it's because there are other headlines people want to cover, and you...
Yeah, I would say, like, that's not... What's not happening is not news. What is happening is news. Therefore, we only cover news. Therefore, we don't cover what's not happening. Therefore, we can excuse ourselves of not having tracked this phenomena beforehand. We were as shocked as you were, Maria.
It goes back to... There's a really good quote by James Madison where he talks about it's all about the slow and gradual as opposed to the sudden and the violent. Like, all people notice is the sudden and the violent, but they don't notice the cumulative effects.
Well, I mean, think about any story, right? Like, even forget news. Forget just life story, right? Those stories make... If you were telling... You're sitting at a bar with somebody and you get over a beer, it's better to tell a story that has some sort of... You wouldn't believe this crazy tale. You know, I mean, in general, that's... The kind of stories we don't like, but hey, oh, I got coffee this morning, then I went to lunch, and then I was having, and, you know, that I think that that's just, it's about the entertainment level. And I think until we admit that a lot of this is about entertainment, it just is, all the stories we listen to.
Well, how entertaining is it, Maria? I mean, it's seems to me we're entertaining ourselves to death.
Right. Amusing Ourselves to Death is the famous book stated in its title. You know, I think that it is important to hold people's attention, no doubt about it. And we are conditioned to report in a way, to speak in a way, and to comment in a way where we will maintain people's attention. But there are really important consequences to that. And even if we want to maintain telling news stories from the crisis perspective, or only when the crisis happens, you know, we just have to know that there's a consequence, and that is we weren't prepared for a guy to open fire and kill 75 people. We, as a world, as a humanity, were not prepared. Well, you know what? This has probably been building for a while. And when nobody knew that it was building for a while, nobody was really taking any kind of appropriate action.
I think people didn't expect a blonde-haired, green-eyed, or blue-eyed terrorist to emerge. In fact, the media has been very reluctant to call him a terrorist, whereas you can bet if this was a Muslim, he would be identified that way.
That's the interesting thing about this, right? He was so handsome. I'm serious. And people just don't know how to react.
You see, the whole point of all of this is... You know, the whole point of Nazi Germany. You went back to Germany. You know, it's the Aryan. You know, is supposed to be the role model for a higher type of people. You know, and of course, you know, look what they managed to achieve. So, you know, we have to look at these things with a critical eye. We have to look at them in an analytical way. We can't just accept the first thing we read. Usually the first story is wrong about any breaking crisis. It usually takes some time to get at the real story. I mean, you know, here we have Mr. Arabu, the Yankee pitcher, who's found, dead at home, hanging himself. And then, you know, then it takes a little time and you realize that this particular person had been abused by his boss, George Steinbrenner, was called a fat toad and was, you know, basically ridiculed and pushed out of baseball. And I guess this sort of really scarred him in a way. So, you know, we're all sort of fragile in this way. And there's always a backstory to everything. There's always something that's deeper. And I think what you're doing in your research, Maria, is to get at those things that most people don't think about.
That's what I'm trying to do, and I'm hoping to persuade others to do that more, because there's a deeper context and there are deeper trends and patterns and causation that we really need to understand in order to make this globalized world increasingly connected work in a way that we can prosper as a humanity, as opposed to one group prospering and not the other.
Now, just tell us again the name of the book to come and the publisher.
The book is called Kill the Messenger, The Media's Role and the Fate of the World. And there are 11 cases. But, you know, it's not all bad. There's a lot of positive in it. There are journalists who have had profound impacts on their communities, taking a country from absolute civil war and slaughter to peace just by doing their jobs. We have journalists who risked their lives and brought democracy to their countries. You know, we've got journalists who have helped to topple dictatorships. And, you know, Egypt wasn't the first one, or Tunisia wasn't the first one. It's really a world that journalists have at their fingertips. They can make a huge difference, and citizen journalists can too. It's a matter of telling the truth, getting the context, and explaining to people the deeper context, like Danny is suggesting.
Well, Maria Armudian, thank you very much for joining us. Now, Irene McGee, just final point here, final thought from you. How do we get media literacy education into our schools, into our lives, so that people will learn the toolkit of how to ask questions and the importance of doing so?
Well, I think that's so interesting. I think we start getting curriculums going. I mean, we really have to get, right? We have to make media literacy stuff a little more entertaining.
Right. So it's not just boring, but it's.
I went to this thing they're doing a project where they're taking these 3D models of humans and they're making busts of famous people. But what they're doing, it's called MakerBot, and you should totally check it out. And anyway, but they're taking that, how they learn this, and they're trying to make plastic shops and media education using, like, teaching people how to, like, kids how to use lasers to make 3D things. And like, that's the thing. I guess it takes, like, people like you and I, who do know about this, or Maria, and figuring out ways so that we can train kids.
And Kat here in the studio.
Oh, and Kat. And it should be a class. I think there should be a class, like a required class.
Well, you know, I mean, that's certainly something we're hoping for. I've been working on this, of course, for many years. Our mediachannel.org is supposed to be back online very soon. Hopefully we can continue some of that work that we've been doing over the years. I want to thank everybody for joining me today here on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com, when our team of experts, our gang of media warriors who are trying to do something about the media, Maria Armudian in California, Irene McGee here in New York, Kat Waters, who's working with us, and, you know, we just hope that you'll take a moment out to check out NewsDissector.com, which is the blog I do every day. You'll find points of view and angles and information that you may not find in other places. My film, Plunder, the Crime of Our Time, has a website too, plunderthecrimeofourtime.com. You can check that out and find out more about the film, see some clips from it, perhaps tell your friends about it. So that's all connected work in the business of truth-telling and truth-seeking. And it's something that we at PRN believe in. Hopefully you do as well. You wouldn't be here listening in. And we want to hear from you. You can write to me at Danny@mediachannel.org. Danny@mediachannel.org. Tell me you heard the show. Any suggestions? We're looking for some interns, people who might want to work on online journalism projects and some filmmaking projects, which I have underway right now. So there's stuff to do. There are things to learn. But get involved. Don't just sit there and do nothing. Thank you again to Matt for engineering today, for PRN, for being here to allow my voice to be heard to all 12 of you who are listening, and hopefully more. And stick with us. Come back next week at the same time and same station.